The Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast is a lonely two-man crew this week. But don't fret for us. Matt and Corbett have loads to discuss heading into an exciting Week 9. Euless Trinity showed its championship muscle with a win over South Lake Carroll. DeSoto picked up some steam heading into this week's massive matchup against Cedar Hill. And Keller Central broke a 24-game district winning streak for Denton Geyer and has us scratching our heads about 5-6A. We talk about all the games of note from last week. Corbett breaks down the UIL Legislative Council news in Part 2, and we preview a colossal slate of games this week, all coming up on the podcast. Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast, Matt Wixon. It's just a sad, sad day that it's just me and you, but the two-man team, we'll get it done.
It's old school. We've done this a few times.
We have. Yeah. We have. Avi is out. He's actually in a meeting. Rhiannon might come and join us here in a second. So we probably should keep the door unlocked for her. Hold on just one second. I'll unlock it. Okay, there we go.
Click.
Greg Riddle, he's home. So it's just me and you. We've got lots to discuss. No coach today because we'll talk a little bit about the UIL Legislative Council in part two. But part one, let's get to games of last week. Some big games. Some impactful games. And as we go closer to the season's end, these games get more and more important. Great games this week in part three. Carroll and Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
That worked out just like you expected, right?
Well, pretty close. I mean, if you factor in or base that on, is it going to go down to the wire? Is it going to be exciting? Is it, going to be contested to the very end? Yeah, typical Trinity-Carroll game.
Yeah, and it was a game that, Trinity – had it in the bag there at the start of the fourth quarter. They were up by 14 and looked strong. And Carroll, as you might expect, Dragon Mystique and whatnot, they made a really strong push.
Hard to put away. Yeah.
I mean, Zach Farrar made a long touchdown catch and, they got close. But then DeJohn Garrett breaks a 59-yard touchdown to push it back up to two scores. Little Jordan Humphrey scores again. The Mason Holmes, how would you rate his performance?
I thought he looked real good. I think especially in the first half, Little Jordan Humphrey, I keep saying Little Jordan Humphrey.
LJ.
LJ, that's easier. I was really impressed by him because he's just so versatile. And wherever they put him, he's really effective. He was splitting out wide as receiver, made some really nice catches. Of course, he's as a running back, which is kind of what we've come to know him as. And then he's taking direct snaps as a quarterback.
He's an intriguing guy, yeah.
He is. And, if he was on defense, I bet he could play the line. He'd be a...
rush in, awesome outside linebacker, safety.
I mean, he's just
put
a great athlete.
A lot of places. Well, that score closes it within 37-35. With a minute 46 to go, they kick an onside kick.
Mm-hmm. Really good onside kick, too.
Euless Trinity recovers that, and then they just run, as you might expect. But a real, real big run by Jayron Wilson on second and 14. He gets a 15-yard run to extend that drive, and they run out the clock. Euless Trinity, they improve, as you might expect.
And speaking of Wilson, since I think most people have come to know him as just kind of the big breakaway guy, because, part of that is Trinity's offensive line. He's going to bust some big holes, and Jayron can get – once he gets going, people don't catch him. So you see a lot of these 59-, 60-yard runs. But he had so many big third-down runs.
He's a tough runner between the tackles.
Third 10, third 11. And I love how he knows how to be patient, because when he sees something, he's gone. But there are a bunch of times where – He would kind of slow down at the line, and he's setting things up, and those blockers are so good. If you just – sometimes you have to wait for the opening, and he would do that. And then what could have been maybe a 5 to 6 yard gain, he would turn into a 15 or 20 because he just set things up and waited. And one last thing about Trinity. Holy cow. Tyler Nattee, their quarterback. I love, too, how Trinity at some point – there's sometimes there's a tendency coaches – They want to show how they're very smart. They are smart. Shoot, I wouldn't want to do a lot of the stuff they're going to, but sometimes when things are working, there was a drive in there where Trinity gave the ball to Tyler Nattee, and he picked up like 10 yards on his first run. He's the quarterback, by the way, for Trinity. And Trinity just kept giving him the ball, just snap it to him and go. And like six runs in a row, 15, 12, 17, because he is a ball.
Sometimes coaches do get a little too cute, but Trinity is never cute. They're all about... Well, I take that back. Sometimes Coach Lineweaver used to run some crazy double reverses and stuff. But most of the time, it's, here's what we're doing.
We're running around this general vicinity. Please stop us. Yeah, and no one can.
And I love watching Trinity because, I mean, when Nati is about 240 pounds, he's basically a lineman who's playing quarterback, and he can run. Doesn't run like a lineman.
No, he's like five. He's like 5'9", 240.
And then they'll do that, run, and then they'll do that beautiful little play action where he runs off to his left. He's a left-hander. And he gets to throw about a 7-yard pass to a tight end that ends up for about a 25-yard gain because you got to sell out on that run to have any chance to stop it.
Euless Trinity is now 8-0. They're 4-0 in district play. Any chance that this is a championship-winning Trinity team? Do you get that vibe?
I definitely do. I mean, as I wrote in a blog this week, I don't think I would pick against Allen before a game until Allen loses because they've just impressed me so many times. But I haven't seen a team that can challenge Allen any more so than Trinity when I watch the way Trinity plays, because Trinity's defense is going to get people off the field and their offense is going to stay on the field for a long time. And that Allen defense is about as good as I've seen out there. But Trinity has played a really tough schedule. You know, they beat Concord De La Salle in the opener. Of course, they beat Carroll now. That was a really good game.
Galena Park North Shore.
Galena Park
North Shore. On the
road. On the road, that's right. And I just think Trinity, with the way they play, they are going to hang close with anybody, and they're going to make you win a game. They are not going to give you a game. Well, so in the playoffs, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in the playoffs.
They could conceivably lose in the first round of the playoffs because they could face DeSoto. There's a very strong
–
or South Grand Prairie, who had a big lead last year. Yeah. Either of those teams – those teams matched up on Friday. DeSoto 48-31. I say that they could meet DeSoto. DeSoto is now 3-4, two and one in district. But the key matchup for them is not a game that they're playing. You know, they're playing Cedar Hill, and if they upset Cedar Hill, then they've got things rolling and are likely going to be the top seed. But if they fall to Cedar Hill, they're going to be looking really hard at South Grand Prairie Mansfield, you know, a game that's looming out there. Because if South Grand Prairie ends up winning that game and just has one district loss, a district loss to DeSoto, or maybe they have two district losses, you know, they might be able to sneak past DeSoto since DeSoto's picked up that extra loss. You know, it's conceivable. You know, it's something that's out there that DeSoto's got to watch for. Now, this was an impressive performance by DeSoto. LD Brown, he rushes for 179 and 4 touchdowns. Tristan Wallace, not a lot in the air, but rushes for 168 and 2 scores. That's a lot of rushing yards against a team that's pretty gritty. In SGP, but both of those teams will be very, you know, worthwhile opponents to Euless Trinity as we move forward. So it'd be really interesting to see how that shakes out. Flower Mound Marcus and Plano East was probably the next, you know, high profile game.
Right.
And Marcus rushes for 380 in that game. They win 41-20. CJ Respas and Nate Hopkins both go over 100 yards, both score touchdowns.
Big threat in 6A Division 2. I think they're a nice run.
Yeah, I think they're mighty tough. Right now they're 7-1, 5-1 in district, and their only loss is to Allen in a very competitive game. Allen on a bye week this week, so they get rested up. Another impactful game in that district, a couple of them, in fact. Plano West and Louisville. Louisville improves to 3-2 in district play and 4-3 overall with a 21-16 win.
And huge win for Louisville in that,
absolutely,
that district, which is all – bunched up in the middle.
It is jumbled up because they're kind of trying to keep pace with McKinney Boyd, who defeats Plano, and Plano's woes continue. That was 21-7. Caden Markham. You know, we're thinking about at the beginning of the year that it was going to be Grant Restmeyer's year, that he was going to have to throw the ball, but they've really established Markham as a running back, not of the ilk of the, you know, Dedrick Scrivens of the world and Brian Driscoll's, but he's been awfully productive, and that was a 176-2 score game on the ground. For them. And, you know, Hebron, they keep their slim playoff hopes alive with a big win over Flower Mound. It was a game that was pretty much going to eliminate one of those teams. And as 45-17, Hebron rushes for 353 in that win. Big.
Yeah.
The biggest upset of the week, there's no doubt about it. Keller Central. Denton Geyer. Keller Central came in without a win in district. Denton Geyer came in with a 24-game district winning streak. And Keller Central pulls up an upset on Thursday, 24-21, and five turnovers.
Yeah, boy, that will give you an upset.
Five turnovers and a missed 29-yard field goal with 6 seconds left. Yikes. Yeah.
That's how upsets happen, for sure.
For sure. Denton Ryan, they can continue to, I wouldn't say blow people out.
But they're winning.
They're winning, and they're playing good defense. They haven't allowed teams to to go really north of 28 or so in many weeks. Mm-hmm. They win 24-21 over Keller Fossil Ridge in a close game, a game winner with 5 minutes to go. What do you think about that district? I still think it's Guyer. I think when Guyer and Ryan face off, I think that Guyer's still got the advantage, but,
it's hard to tell.
That's a shocking upset, and Ryan continues to play well.
The two teams that you would think are the playoff locks are the ones that we thought at the start of the year, Guyer and Ryan. The loss by Guyer was really stunning. As far as Ryan, I think it's interesting to look at how this district's going to play out. We start talking about Division One and Division Two at this point. In fact, I'm writing about it this week.
Yeah, Denton, you are.
Yeah. And Denton Ryan, I don't want to get this totally wrong, but I think, believe if Keller Fossil Ridge gets in there, Ryan would go D1. Mm-hmm. If they don't, Ryan will go D2. And I think it's going to make a world of difference as far as what your playoff march potential looks like, because you know, it's all about matchups when you get in the playoffs in that division.
And staying out of D1,
In most cases, D1 is going to be really tough. So that'll be interesting. But that district is really hard to tell. Whenever you have an Ofer team beat the undefeated team, the district is kind of a shambles as far as prediction.
I mean, it's a crazy district. There'll be some games this week that are impactful. Keller's still kicking around. Mm-hmm. Central and Fossil Ridge face off. We'll talk a little bit about that in part three. Saxey and Rockwall played a game. Was going to be a defensive struggle, right?
Is it not a defensive showcase?
Rockwall wins 58-47, and if I'm Saxey, I'm sweating bullets. They're exactly kind of where they were a year ago. They started off 5-0. Now they're 2-2 in district, it's
start pulling out the playoff scenarios and the tiebreakers.
Well, especially when Tyler Lee comes roaring back against Garland. Mm-hmm. Both of those teams are now 2-2 in district play. That was 51-47, despite Jacoby Williams throwing for 328 and 5 scores. That district is going to be one to watch, because there's going to be that one team, because Rockwall and Rowlett look like they're facing off this week in a battle of district unbeatens. And then you've got those three teams there all at 2-2. Saxey's got to make a push in order to get in the playoffs. It'd be a shame if that team, such a talented team, would miss the playoffs in back-to-back years. But it could certainly happen. In District 10-6A, Highland Park.
Yep.
Randy Allen. What are you going to do? 34-6. They beat Lake Highlands. Lake Highland teams that entered the game at 3-0. And, man, what
in
can
district,
you say? Yeah, 3-0 district. 3-3 overall. But
right. What
can you say about Randy Allen and his bunch?
I think that's another team where I was talking about. I mean, they're a very different team than Trinity, but traditionally, Highland Park is just not going to give you a game. I mean, give away a game. You're going to have to come out and take it from them. And people can sometimes. Highland Park doesn't have necessarily the biggest team or the fastest team, any of that. But it shows that, Highland Park, that's why they're going to be so solid every year. They're going to make the most of what they got.
Yeah. Let's go to a few 5A scores. Tyler, John, Tyler, and Ennis. Ennis showing a little cracks. And they've got a tough game this week, too, against Lufkin, but 40-29. Tyler John Tyler picks up the win. Both those teams were unbeaten in district, and now Ennis is 3-1, but 4-3 overall. Do you think that can kind of get things together, or is this just a different Ennis team than last year? They lost a lot of playmakers.
Well, I think when they beat Mansfield Timberview in that first game of the year, I think maybe we then overplayed that victory, that way Ennis is not skipping a beat.
Because you look at what Timberview's done.
Yeah, but I mean, Ennis, I think they're a really solid team and they're going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs, but it's really hard to replace as many playmakers as they had last year, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, and Region 2 is a buzzsaw. I mean, if you look at it in Division 1 or Division 2, it's just got so many talented teams. Let's talk about that sweet Mansfield district that we always love. Timberview, it's Jordan Kitna time. It's like the flute. It's like Jordan Kitna is Willis Reed, and he's coming out the locker room. Yeah, he's like 4 or 5 weeks off of an ACL injury.
So how many people are? No, it's not an ACL. It's collarbone.
Oh, it was a collarbone injury. Yeah. Okay, so he was.
Which
back.
Is why people are going, Romo, what up?
Right.
4 weeks, right?
4 weeks after that, 42-31, Kitna throws for three touchdowns on 322. and Waxahachie now.
They've got a chance if they're going to have to run the table, I think.
That, yeah, but they've got a couple of winnable games, and then they play Lancaster at the season's end.
Right.
But Lancaster could have sealed things up, and might maybe the game might not be impactful
for them.
Resting
some people, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look to see how that shakes out. But that's their first district win, and that puts Timberview probably out. I mean, Timberview's one and three in district, and they've got a lot of ground to catch.
And they could win so many districts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could put them in, I would say you could put them in six or seven districts in the area, you know, including the Fort Worth districts.
Right.
And they'd be district champ.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Unfortunately, they're probably looking at being on the outside looking.
Lancaster with a really impressive win over Legacy. Ryan Ross has been such a difference maker for them. 57-21. Those were four touchdowns and 244
something
in the air.
Lancaster has just really never had
right.
a quarterback who can throw like that.
Yeah, I mean, and he's really transformed that team from a team that you had to be creative with, you know, the quarterbacks that they had to a guy who can just sling it to all the receivers. And they've got tons of receivers there. Lake Ridge continues to roll on with a 48-24 win over Red Oak, and they're still unbeaten. And so is Summit, 49-7 on a Thursday night game against Seguin. That's a really nice result there. The other districts that we love to look at, how about 10-5A, Lovejoy and Wiley East?
Yes.
Really good matchup there. But Wiley East, 42-28. Eno Benjamin might be, you know, one of the players we will consider for player of the year. He's
put up incredible numbers.
Put up incredible numbers and really has turned that team into a dangerous threat. He rushes for 205 and three scores.
Yeah, which is funny on a week where we had like four guys rush for 300 or more.
Yeah.
You get overshadowed. run for 200. Yeah, what if, you know.
One of those guys is Khalil Banks. He rushed for 300 yards in the first half of their win against Frisco Liberty. They're still alive in the playoff hunt, 3-3 and 3-5 overall. But they've got, you know, that district, District 9-5A is really crowded. He had six touchdowns and rushed for almost 400 yards in that game. You know, but you have to double up 300 to get to the state record.
Right.
You know, it's way up
it's
there.
It's a crazy record.
Yeah. Lone Star continues to roll 65-19 over Heritage. Jason Shelley with four touchdown passes and 121 yards rushing. That's mighty tough. In a battle of running backs in that district, you talk about two really good running backs. You know, Anthony Begese, he rushes for 183 and two scores. But Jay Orji?
Orji, I think. Orji or Orji?
Orji, right. Yeah. He rushes for 225 and five touchdowns. And Wakeland's win, 45-28. Wakeland improves to 4-1 in district.
That's a team that's made a really nice push over the last 3 weeks.
They've looked really good. You know, the other running back in that district that people look at is Idris Ali. Frisco blanks out Independence 65-0. He rushes for 215 and two scores.
Frisco is putting up some serious points.
Yeah, you know, Frisco has been you know, one of those teams that you looked at and you knew that they were going to be tough just because of what they do offensively, and they've proved it.
Really good offensive line this year, which has helped out a really good running back.
Yeah, let's stick with 5A. Terrell and Forney. Terrell 55-39. You know, they now improved to 6-1 overall, 4-0 district play. Dewanya Tucker with five touchdowns and almost 300 yards in that game. They're looking like the favorite in that district. Poteet's right there at a scare against Roy City.
Yeah.
Surprising result you know, in that win, but 25-20, they're 4-0 in district play, and that'll be a really interesting matchup between Poteet and Terrell.
I agree. The Poteet one makes it harder for me to pick this game because I kind of figured they would have the edge over Terrell, even though I think a lot of Terrell as well. But after the way Roy City hung with Poteet, either Roy City's a lot better than I thought or Poteet was maybe looking ahead a little bit. I don't know.
Two things to talk about before we get out of part one. Congratulations to Philip Murray and TJ.
Yeah.
His first year coming from Lovejoy as an assistant. TJ wins. They beat Hillcrest 28-21.
I'm going out to TJ today.
Hey, cool.
Yeah.
They're 2-2 in district play, and two wins in district matches their win total, I believe, from 2008 to 2014.
That's probably right because they did have that 36 game losing streak.
Yeah, it was a pretty salty losing streak. But they were, you know, even when they picked up wins, it was non-district games. That's an amazing, amazing stat. The other thing doesn't really involve our area, but it kind of does. And that is Everman. Matt Stepp, hand over your heart. They lose in overtime to Cleburne, and they could miss the playoffs. If they miss the playoffs, that could conceivably change the fate of Aledo and push Aledo down into the Division II playoffs, which is kind of a crazy
thing. I expect they will go down to Division II along with, who is it?
Read Matt's column.
Yeah.
We're going to come back, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what we learned from the UIL Legislative Council, and then we will talk part three, games to watch. Part two, UIL Legislative Council. I know it's kind of a boring thing for a lot of people, but, you know.
This one was more interesting than... And most.
Well, what their UIL is doing is they're rewriting their constitution. So anytime you do that, you're going to be talking about, you know, a pretty substantial look at a lot of rules.
We the people, in order to create a more perfect touchdown.
The touchdown union. a couple of things that really were notable. I think that the biggest news coming out of there is they're finally going to codify their decision on what defines gender.
Very interesting.
The UIL had been kind of sitting on the sidelines. The state organizations all across the country have been weighing in on that. UIL, pretty much expectedly, is going to be fairly conservative to reflect the state. They had already been advising schools to use a birth certificate and questions of gender, but they're going to put that into law. But that only makes the UI, that really puts the UIL on the far end of the spectrum as far as what state organizations are doing. There's only five states that, you know, require a birth certificate or some sort of, proof of.
It's not the most progressive move.
It's not a very progressive move, but it is certainly a move that the UIL feels that it has to make at this point. In rewriting the Constitution, they have to at least come to some sort of decision as to, you know, what their policy is on transgendered athletes. We'll see how that goes. I would not be surprised to see a myriad of court cases here in the coming years to maybe address that. The one that'd be most of interest for football fans is probably the UIL's starting to relax the amateur athlete rule. They're allowing schools to have a little bit more leeway with what they do with meals and snacks. They're allowing parents to receive passes and free tickets, which I think is a great move from the UIL.
Yeah. Because you've got a lot of situations where parents, I mean, that really is a hindrance.
Right.
That they can't go because, yeah. I mean, a lot of these places are charging $6, $7, $8, maybe more. I don't pay, so I'm out of the loop. But, and I realize for a lot of families that actually can be, I mean, when you look at a district like
DISD, where it's got just a huge number, I mean, it's a shocking number of people who are economically disadvantaged, maybe close to 70% of the student population in the district, is free and reduced lunch or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. You know, $8 a pop or $7 a pop or even $5 a pop for a family to watch their son play. That's significant money, and I applaud the UIL for making that change. The one that got people kind of upset was the idea that that schools can now buy state championship rings. And this is another one that I'm in favor of. If you win a state championship, why shouldn't the school be able to throw money, at a ring for you? People say, well, Highland Park's going to, give the platinum ring. Well, okay. Highland Park's got to win that state championship first. Right. Then they do it. I guarantee you DISD will find a way to provide a ring.
Oh, absolutely.
If people win state championship, that's money that school districts will be more than happy to find in their budgets in order to make that happen.
The other thing is, if you go to a championship, you're getting a cut from that championship money. So, there's a bigger pool.
At least in things like basketball and football.
Right, you're right. I guess if it's golf.
Golf or cross country, it's going to be a little bit different. But I agree with Dr. Brightup, Charles Brightup, the executive director of the UIL. He said that you shouldn't have to do a bake sale after you win a state championship in order to get your ring. And, you know, he's right about that. The other things, a couple of things involving track. They do away with the distance rule that capped runners from running two races above, or actually 400 meters or above. Yeah, Dr. Bright was concerned about scoring. That you know, he said, "You best not tear down the fence unless you know what's on the other side of it," which I thought was kind of a really good quote.
He's worried about somebody dominating on distance. To
well, he's worried about a number of things. He's worried about the scoring, that you could have one athlete really affect scoring.
Right.
You know, in a
that would be
athlete.
No difference to me. Different to me than sprinting the way it is now, because you're allowed to. You can sprint in a 100, 200. You can be on relay teams, which get double points.
You can do 100, 200, 400 and be on
if anything,
relays.
If anything, it probably balances things a little more.
Well, there is some thought that that might be the case. But he says there are already state championships for distance runners in cross country.
Yeah.
You know, you've got races for people to win that aren't necessarily in the track season. And this could have a deleterious effect on participation. Because in the smaller classifications, you've got a kid running – the 800 and the 1600, that kid's certainly going to be able to run the 400 more than likely, and he's just going to push a participant out of the regional and state meet.
Yeah,
he's probably right about that. And I think he's really afraid of, you know, the scoring implications. And, you know, justifiably, there's a big question as to, you know, anytime you make a change, you know, the Texas state track meet, you know, we talk a lot about basketball and football, but the state track meet is revered. It's considered one of the best in the country. When you start changing events and start adding events and changing points, that's something that
it's
purists...
extremely well attended.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's certainly one of the best attended track meets, at least at the high school level in the nation. So, you know, I can understand his hesitation on that. They also added some track runners, some swimmers to the state swim meet. They increased the field by 8. So they essentially increased the field by a third. You know, all told, a lot of stuff going on. As the UIL rewrites its constitution, they're revisiting some of these things. You know, they're making some arcane rules a little bit more up to date. They're making some rules that are, confusing. They're trying to clarify that. And, you know, you certainly applaud their efforts. A lot of this has been pushed.
Did they add curling?
Did not. But they did create two interesting ad hoc committees. One, to address new and emerging sports, which every year every session, there's two sessions a year, they're always bombarded with, let's talk about this sport, let's talk about that sport.
Sure,
this year, there was presentations on water polo and bowling.
Bowling
has been consistent, and so is water polo. You know, I think both perhaps should merit a really close look. It's kind of shady what the UIL did. I wouldn't say shady, but it was fairly procedural, where they just kind of talked over water polo, even though water polo had made its case during and then they said, oh, we're just going to create this committee to look at it.
Back burner.
So, yeah, it kind of does, you know, it's a procedural thing to back burner it a little bit. But if they can establish something that says, here are the parameters that you need X number of schools, you need this number of participants, you need to show that there's not a financial note of significance. And water polo, they're saying, You do an opposite swim season. You use the swim coach. You use the same pool. It's got the same kids. You know, there's some push to see that. I think that's a good thing. It allows those people who want to add Team Quidditch, which actually has been presented to the UIL, a chance to at least know what the baseline is. Now, the other one is of note for people who are interested in footballs, and that is the playoff. They're creating an ad hoc committee to look at how many teams advance to the playoffs. Now, there's a representative out of Lubbock who had filed a bill in last legislature saying that he wanted to celebrate victory or something. It was some sort of, you know.
Oh, so by reducing the playoff.
Reducing the playoff field and, you know.
It's a great use of time.
Yeah, it really was. But the UIL is responsive to lawmakers.
Sure.
They certainly have to
be. They have to be, yeah.
And so they're going to be looking at that. Everybody is talking about the 5A Division I, Division II split. That did not happen. The UIL, you know, said that they're going to continue to look at it, despite the fact that there was a majority of superintendents over the whole 5A. It wasn't necessarily overwhelming in some regions, and it wasn't overwhelming at all once you do a breakdown between individual schools and multiple school districts. Individual schools in 5A, we want to be placed in districts that with teams of our size, you know, districts like Mansfield or DISD, they don't want any part of that because it just
split them all up.
Yeah, you potentially split your districts up.
Right.
Like you see, you know, with some of the 4A schools in Dallas, you've got some of them playing far south, some of them playing far north in Argyle and things like that, and Sanger, it creates a logistical headache for districts. So that is, really, that's the meat of it. Should be some really interesting discussions here moving forward in June as they add more things. One thing of note for all non-football fans, and that is they're adding a tournament back. They had cut a tournament 4 years ago. There's a push to add a tournament back in 5A and 6A, which will make basketball coaches, baseball coaches, softball, all those people very happy. They've been limited from 3 to 2. Well, that's it for part 2. We'll have part 3 really quick, and that's games to watch this week. Part 3.
Yay.
Hey, Matt.
Hey.
This would be a good week for footballs.
I think so.
Do you know where you're headed out?
I'm going to be at the Cedar Hill for DeSoto Cedar Hill.
Ooh, that's not a game that people like to watch, is it?
No, it's pretty boring. And there's no emotion involved.
No, that game has been moved on Thursday night last couple of years, but it's played on Friday night this year, not on television.
I think it was Friday last year, but you're right, a couple of years before.
When Cedar Hill pulled it off the upset at DeSoto, that was on a nationally televised game. It should be a pretty salty matchup.
Well, I think
I don't know if it's the game of the week, but I mean, certainly heading into the season, it was the one game that everybody circles. DeSoto's record might, suppress that a little bit, but they've certainly got a shot to beat Cedar Hill.
Oh, for sure. And I think I like this game as an interesting game because, Cedar Hill, of course, they're rolling. They want to keep their momentum going towards playoffs. And if you talk about DeSoto, not that it rights all the wrongs or erases those four losses, but if you beat Cedar Hill, you're back and you say, okay, we are a big-time contender again.
Yep.
I think they are a big-time contender, but they do need to prove it on the field.
Yeah, and it certainly would do wonders for their confidence moving forward to close out the season and to get that swagger back that DeSoto's had the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more impactful game is Euless Trinity and Coppell.
Right.
Although, Euless Trinity is, certainly the favorite in this. They're 8-0. Coppell's got 3 losses. But if Coppell somehow manages to pull off the upset, they've got a chance
to be the D1.
To be the D1.
The top seed.
The top seed in Division 1. This will essentially determine the top seed in Division 1. A game that I think, as I don't want to say flying under the radar. I think it's one of the best games of the week, but that's Rowlett and Rockwall. About those teams unbeaten in district play, and it'll probably decide the district champion. Rowlett's been playing awfully good. Logan Bonner, their quarterback, has been outstanding. Other games of note, Denton Ryan puts its unbeaten record on the line against Keller. Keller, one of those teams that's fighting for the middle of the district, that district pack. An interesting matchup, not necessarily from records-wise, but Keller Central coming off that win. They have to play Fossil Ridge. Both these teams are 3-4, but you're talking about potentially falling out of the district race,
right?
With a loss, so that's always pretty important. Mansfield and South Grand Prairie face off at Grand Prairie's Gopher Warrior Bowl. We know the implications of that, for both teams. But those are going to be your four teams matching up in that district this week. You've got DeSoto Cedar.
It's basically the four playoff teams.
Yeah, Mansfield and South Grand Prairie. There's a myriad of playoff considerations that could come out of that. Irving MacArthur Skyline, a game that we had circled in the beginning of the year, said, man, this is the game. Well, no, not so much. Jesuit has kind of figured that problem out, but an interesting game nonetheless. North Mesquite, Mesquite Horn, a game that I thought was going to be for the district title a couple of weeks in the season. Well, Mesquite Horn now
has scuffled
and North Mesquite had that tough loss to Highland Park, who looks like they're going to run
away
with that.
But a big opportunity for North Mesquite because they're 6-1, have that 1-point loss to Highland Park, but really haven't beaten anyone of note.
Right, and Horn would certainly be a good feather in their
team.
Yep. Yeah, in 5A games, Lone Star and Frisco, it's a nice matchup there. Frisco can be able to run the ball and maybe shorten the game against Lone Star. Certainly a game to watch.
Good test for that Lone Star front, because they have a good defensive front, and I'd like to see how they hold up against that Frisco offensive line.
Yeah, and Idris Ali. Yeah. A game I forgot to mention in 6A, a really good one, Louisville and Plano East. Plano East could be looking at missing the playoffs despite that great start if they lose this game. It's not probable, but it's possible. Louisville now at 2-2. It might be a 3-2. I think they're 3-2 in district play.
So.
You know, and they've got to keep rolling to get in the playoffs. Other games in 5A, McKinney North and Denison, that's a matchup that if McKinney North loses, they're at risk of missing the playoffs. Rockwall Heath and Forney, the loser of that
Rockwall
game.
Heath's got to win that.
Yeah, to potentially.
And Forney, which started, what, 5 or 6-0?
5-0, yeah. 5-0. And they could potentially be that fourth team. I think that's the battle of the fourth team out of into that district.
Right.
You've got a matchup of South Oak Cliff and Segaville. South Oak Cliff just beat the brakes off of the Kimball last week. And now Segaville comes in at 6-1. It's got a better record and unbeaten in district play. We'll see how that they fare. In the Mansfield district, Lancaster and Summit.
Yee!
That's a good
one. Lancaster probably feeling a lot better about this after beating Legacy last week. If they had lost, this could be really dicey. But still, in that district, you got to pick up a win whenever you can because it's just so tight. Summit undefeated. But I don't know. I might pick Lancaster in the game.
I think I'll probably pick Lancaster.
It is at
the second stadium in Mansfield. It's at the the B spot, not the A spot. A spot gets Lake Ridge and Legacy.
That's
another
Vernon
very
Newsom.
Good. Yeah, Vernon Newsom. The other one is R.L. Anderson. Lufkin and Ennis. Lufkin's a tough team.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a tough one for Ennis.
Yeah, it is at home for Ennis, so there's that. Tyler John Tyler goes on the road to Corsicana, a team that we haven't really talked about, but they played well. They had a big win last week. They certainly played well. A lot better this year than last. Steve Hoffman's got them, you know, turned around. That's going to be a very tough test against a John Tyler team that everybody knows. I mean, they started 0-3, but now
4-0 in district.
Yeah, I think they've rolled in district. Athens at Kauffman. Athens has two losses. Kauffman has been one of the area's best teams. Their lone loss, they beat Terrell. Their lone loss is to Kennedale. And a little private school action. Tyler T.K. Gorman, 7-0. Dallas Christian, 6-1.
A good one.
Should be an interesting one. That is in Dallas. At Dallas Christian, which is in Mesquite.
In Mesquite.
Yeah. Mesquite's Chargers Stadium. Should be a great game. We'll have playoff scenarios, tiebreakers and stuff at the end of this week. We wish we could have got them to you last week, but I was out of town. And, you know,
well, there's just so many.
There's a lot of.
You take away a week and you erase a lot of.
We're not
possibilities.
Yeah, we're not saying
out
that.
There.
Okay, they're that one in team at 1-4, but can win out. Yeah, okay. we're eliminating those people after this week. So, Matt, any final thoughts? Should be a good week.
Yeah,
you said before we got in here that you enjoy this time of the year because these games are more impactful and you can kind of see the playoff picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all get excited when the playoffs are around the corner, and coaches always say, "Hey, gotta take it one week at a time." But you know, by nature, we just look ahead.
Hey, make sure you listen to us. Make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes and check us out at the beta site. Thanks.